Sorry, it's been a while since I've been here.
Yeah.
But we're back in the...
But you kept telling me about you, about the...
What's that?
I came twice and they kept telling me you were going to be here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Now the disappointment's real.
Now the anticipation is over.
Well, it's good to have you.
I'm at where I need to be right now.
Good, good. Well, we're studying the life of someone we hopefully we can all choose to follow in terms of a lot of his example, and that's the life of the Apostle Paul, or Shaul, or Saul. And we are in, take a look at the outline here. It's still his return to Jerusalem after his third missionary journey. We're going to be looking at Acts 21 today. And by way of review, keep in mind that, remember, he was leaving Asia Minor on a boat. He stopped, review point one, he stopped and met with the elders of the congregation in Ephesus and had a number of warnings for them about being aware of people in leadership that might not have right motives. We also looked at, as he stopped at some of these points along the Mediterranean coast on his way to Jerusalem, a lot of believers warned him about what was ahead and didn't want him to go because of the danger that he faced. And so now we're at Roman numeral 2 here. After their landing in Caesarea, they go south, but in Bible terms, they go up. They ascend to the Mount Zion, which is Jerusalem. And this is where we're going to pick up in Acts chapter 21. And could someone read verses 17 through 19 of Acts chapter 21?
When we arrived in Jerusalem, the brothers received us warmly. The next day, Paul and the rest of us went to see James, and all the elders were present. Paul greeted them and reported in detail what God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry.
Good, thanks a lot, Eric. So, 17, they get in Jerusalem, and how was Paul received by the other brothers there?
Warmly.
Yeah, warmly. And then, the next day, who does Paul go to see?
James and elders.
James, yeah. Now, who? Now, is this the James, the brother of John, the Apostle James? No, James was executed by Herod shortly before Paul became a believer. And so James was executed early on in Jerusalem. This actually is James, the biological brother of the Messiah, Jesus of Nazareth. And, hey, John Mark.
Hey there.
And this James is also the author of the book we know in the New Testament, the Epistle of James. This James also did not thought his brother was crazy during his ministry. He was not a believer, nor was he a disciple during his brother's ministry. He believed that he lost it. And it wasn't until after the resurrection where Jesus' brother came to faith that his brother was the Messiah. So this is the guy that attended Jesus' bar mitzvah, wrestled with him, you know, in the backyard, probably worked with him with his father. And because of that special relationship that he had with Emmanuel, the other leaders in Jerusalem naturally looked to him as a leader. Now, so he goes to see James, and who else was with James when Paul goes to see James?
Elders.
All the elders in Jerusalem, yeah. Now, so James... isn't, you know, the Pope of Jerusalem. It's he and all of the other pastors, all of the other pastor and elder. We learn that pastor equals elder equals bishop equals overseer. And, you know, James is probably considered a first among equals. But nonetheless, they're all together. Now, why don't you think there's any apostles present? You know, where's Peter? Where's Matthew? Where's Thomas? Where's Andrew? Any ideas?
Don't ask me, because I'm going to give you an answer.
That's what we're looking for. Yeah. Even wild guesses are appreciated.
No, I'm going to give you a modern answer as to why they're not around.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Because they bought into the church.
Well, you mean they're not, help me out, you mean they're not there in Jerusalem, and they're just in attendance at this meeting?
All of the above.
Okay. Well, it's actually what is likely has happened is these apostles are likely outside of Jerusalem because of the command of Jesus that they go to the other outermost ends of the earth And so Peter is probably in Rome at this time. There is tradition that says that Thomas is in India at this time. And so most of the apostles are probably not in Judea. They're probably in the Roman Mediterranean world, or they're even east of that. So who's left in Jerusalem is James, and the other people left as leaders of the early Christian community.
Do you think that's maybe why the modern church today thinks that we shouldn't have apostles, evangelists, and teachers within the church?
That's a good question.
That's a loaded question.
Yeah, exactly. Take a look at verse 19. So they're all there, and what does Paul tell these guys all together?
What's going on?
Yeah, what is going on?
What is ministry, where he's been?
Yeah, and what, help me out, what does it say about his ministry? It's right there in verse 19. Did something specific with his ministry.
Well, he's talking about what God is doing in his ministry.
Yeah, what is God doing in his ministry in verse 19?
He's bringing people to Christ.
To Christ. Okay, what kind
Gentiles.
Of people? Okay.
Yeah.
So why, that should throw some signals to you. This guy's that we're in Jerusalem, and Paul is saying God is bringing Gentiles to a Jewish Messiah. And so we just take for granted that, oh, that's just missionary work. But this is extremely controversial still. And in fact, if anyone saw David Brickner when he spoke it here for Jews for Jesus, he mentioned the fact that, you know, it's my ministry gets a lot of flack because it's so, the name is so controversial. How can he be for a Jew for Jesus? And he said, actually, that's not the controversy. If you look at the Bible, the controversy is Gentiles for Jesus. That's the crazy notion.
Yeah.
That is the crazy notion. And don't forget, it still is. Gentiles for Jesus is crazy based on a biblical reading. The only reason Gentiles are part of the covenant relationship with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is because of Jesus, the blood of Jesus Christ, after his resurrection, opened it up to a relationship. But still the folks who kept the law for years, 2,000 plus years, were very concerned about that. How can these guys, being Gentile, have an equal footing with our God? And Paul related that. So, and these guys were aware of it because Paul had been up there for 4 years in Greece and in Asia Minor. And, you know, this controversy had entered in before. You know, there was the Jerusalem Council back earlier in Acts that we read about that was probably 6 or 7 years prior. So these guys knew what was happening, and they knew what Paul was about. And Paul was very excited about this. Look, you guys, you know, all the world is coming to know our God, the God of our nation. And so now we're going to read how this message is received. Could someone read verses 20 through 26?
When they heard this, they praised God. They said to Paul, "You see, brother, how many thousands of Jews have believed, and all of them are zealous for the law. They have been informed that you teach all the Jews who live among the Gentiles to turn away from Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children or live according to our customs. What shall we do? They will certainly hear that you have come, so do what we tell you. There are four men with us who have made a vow. Take these men, join in their purification rites, and pay their expenses so that they can have their heads shaved. Then everybody will know where there is no truth in these reports about you, but that you yourselves are living in obedience to the law. As for the Gentile believers, we have written to them our decision that they should abstain from food sacrificed to idols, from blood, from the meat of strangulated animals, and from sexual immorality." The next day, Paul took the men and purified himself along with them. Then he went to the temple to give notice of the date when the day of purification would end and the offering would be made for each of them.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. So, verse 21, when the elders and James heard it, they began glorifying God. And what was their verbal response? How did they verbally respond to Paul's good news about all these Gentiles coming to know the Lord?
They praised God.
Praise God. And what else? What did they say?
How many Jews have come.
That's right. And these Jews who have come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, what is different about these Jews? Or special about them?
They're zealous for the law.
They're what for the law?
Zealous for the law.
For the law of Moses, right? This is against everything Paul has taught. The first book of the New Testament, Galatians, it's not against everything Paul has taught, but Paul has come on very strongly about you cannot turn a Gentile into a Jew. That's not what coming into a reconciling relationship with the Creator is about. A Gentile should remain a Gentile. His salvation is based on a faith in this Jewish Messiah. So we can't go around turning Gentiles into Jews. And that was interpreted by a lot of Jews as Paul was telling people not to keep the law. So again, very, very controversial. So even though, and Paul also taught plainly and clearly what about the Mosaic Law, and it's theological, it's spiritual, it's a divine implication post-resurrection of Jesus Christ. Let me say it more easily, more simply. What did Paul believe the effect of the law had right at that time in Paul's life and even today? The law of Moses. What did Paul teach the law of Moses, its applicability was?
Well, it's no longer there.
Toast! It's,
yeah.
Done! Finito.
And that's totally
over. Completely finished. Yet, James, the brother of the Messiah, says, we love your news, but we got better news. We got a bunch of Jewish guys who are zealous. They're crazy about the law, and they love Jesus. How do you think Paul took that?
You're not listening to anything I'm telling you.
He probably was probably the least discouraged.
Painful.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is a good lesson for us right here, because watch what Paul does. Verse 21. They've been told about you that you are teaching all the Jews who are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children, nor to walk according to the customs. Now, that sounds true, but it's not. We don't have any, there's no evidence in anything we've read. And again, based on the life of Paul, we've already gone through Galatians, Philippians, 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Romans. There's nothing that he's written that says Jews have to forsake the law. He's never said Jews don't circumcise their children. In fact, here's what he did do before going on his second missionary journey when he met Timothy.
He had him circumcised.
Why?
Be a distraction not to.
Yeah, but why Timothy? Why was Timothy circumcised and not Silas?
Because he's half Jewish.
Yeah, bingo. Silas wasn't a Jew. Timothy's mother was Jewish, and he was a Jew. And it wasn't proper for him not to be circumcised because he was a member of the house of Israel. And so Paul never taught what James is telling him that's being heard. And so here's a good lesson in leadership, too. Often, what you will teach and what you will say and who you are and what you are about is often, when it's effective, it can often be misinterpreted. And there are people that will take what you've said so obviously and make it what they want to hear rather than what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Happens all the time. And that's exactly what's happened to Paul. So Paul, in my mind, with his personality, I might be inclined to rise up and turn the table. What the H? These idiots, they're liars, these just a-holes, tell me who's lying about me, and be all over them. He had a right to be indignant. This guy's been in prison for the gospel, and these guys are going to malign him? Okay, so let's see if Paul does that. Verse 22, what then is to be done? They will certainly hear that you've come. In other words, Paul, even though you've done nothing wrong, we're concerned about what they think about you. So we need to placate the people that are in the wrong. How do we placate these people that are in the wrong? That think something false about you? In my mind, I'm like, what? Let's go correct these jerks. let's go get on these people. But Paul was thankful that members of his own ethnic heritage had become believers. Remember, Paul said in Romans that I wish I were condemned to the pit of hell if my brothers knew their Messiah. I'd make that trade willingly. And so Paul did something every tested and tried leader has to do, but very often, if not at least once, and that is go low. Go low. Take the route of humility. You're right. You know you're right. You got everything. All the chips are lying on your side, but you put your head down and you take the beating. And so instead of Paul rising up and saying, we got to set these idiots straight, verse 23, therefore do this what we tell you. Here Paul has just brought them 4 years worth of money from a bunch of Gentile churches that want to bless these people, and they're telling him what to do. That takes B-A-L-L-S.
And he suffers it.
Exactly right. Think of this lesson in your own lives if you want to be a leader or you're in leadership.
It's a simple parent-child relationship, same concept.
Yeah. But you know what? He didn't have to do it. He didn't have to take it. But they lecture in verse 23, therefore do what we tell you. We have four men, these guys who love Jesus, but are zealous for the law that is no longer in effect, has zero significance in terms of our relationship with our Creator. Verse 24, take them and purify yourself along with them and pay their expenses. With what money?
His money.
Yes! That's exactly right. So that they may shave their heads. And so here Paul has to sink so low as to enter into the bondage of a Mosaic law ritual, to have these guys go through this Old Testament law, go into the temple, and make a donation into the very temple that's controlled by the men that crucified, or responsible largely for crucifying Stephen, Jesus, James. That's some crazy, crazy stuff they're asking Paul to do. Then James goes on. And all will know that there's nothing to the things which they have been told about you, but that you yourself also walk accordingly, and that you, Paul, keep the law. Verse 25, but concerning the Gentiles who have believed, we wrote, and they did write this, they said this in the Council of Jerusalem, having decided that they should abstain from meat, sacrifice to idols, and from blood, and from what is strangled, and from fornication. Verse 26, here's how Paul responds. Not, he entered into a sermon lecturing them, not confronting them about the wrong of their ways, not proceeding forth the glorious theological treatise of Romans that the Mosaic law is done, but he simply does this. Paul takes the men. The next day, he purifies himself. He enters into the bondage. He enters in back into the Mosaic law along with them. He goes to the temple, gives the temple authorities the notice, and pays them that these guys are taking a vow along with them, and they'll be obedient to this vow until the days of this vow are done. And a sacrifice is offered. A sacrifice is offered. Yeah. Paul pays for an animal to be, the blood to be shed, as these guys believe that that's important because it reconciles sin. Is this blasphemy or what?
What really is it, though? As a leader, what is Paul trying to accomplish?
That's what we got to come back to.
Well, he knew he was going to the lion.
There's a lot of people that will be able to judge your external behavior without knowing your heart and make a lot of good observations about the wrong you're in. And if anyone could have judged Paul, any New Testament theologian could judge Paul here. How can you partake in an act whereby people are shedding the blood of animals, thinking that atones for sin, when the ultimate Lamb of God has already given his life for you? Bad stuff here.
No, there's always a drama for the plot.
Well,
this is the drama.
Okay, now, has Paul said anything about Let me ask you this. Have we read anything Paul has taught or written about saving people and reaching out to people?
He's building relationships.
Good, yes.
Go to where they are.
Put
a barrier.
That's good. That's exactly right. Okay. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Put your pen in now.
Yeah, he also said, you know, that we're not supposed to go contrary to the culture. In other words, he became all things to all men.
Big up. Here's where we're going.
Yes.
Here's where we're going. 1 Corinthians chapter 9.
Sorry, I didn't want to jump.
You hit the nail on the head. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Let me get there first so I know what I'm doing. Paul has already written this a few years earlier. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, could someone read verses 19 through 23?
Though I am free and belong to no man, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. To the Jews I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all men, so that by all possible means I might save some.
Then there you go. This is what Paul's all about.
19.
It says right here, verse 20. And to the Jews he became as what?
Jews.
That's right. And he says, to those under the law, he did what?
He became the law.
He came under the law. So that I might do what?
Save.
Win those who are under the law, to bring them out of the law to Jesus Christ.
Well, so he would do whatever was required.
So does this bring that statement of that the ends justify the means?
I think that you can't take this too far, because this is good. Stop right here. But
in context,
in today's day and age, you might be tempted to go down this road. Hey, we're going to the TITTIE bar. Why don't you come join us? I don't think Paul would be up for that under this. Hey, we got a ball of Coke here. We're all doing it. Join in. And come on.
See, you
got to be obedient to the Holy Spirit.
I can see him going ahead and being there, but I can't see him participating as far as paying for the sacrifice and all that kind of stuff.
But he did.
That's what baffles me and everything. I can see him being there and not saying too much about it and just going ahead and going with the flow and all that kind of stuff, but to actually go ahead and pay and to...
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that he probably wasn't like, yeah, you know, let's do this. He probably just very begrudgingly, humbly took it, you know, and in his heart said, I renounce all of this.
I've been seeing the temple authorities. Aren't you that...
Well, we're coming up on that.
All right.
We're coming up on
the that. The center is the means to the end, though.
But yeah, it is.
We face that today. It is
in a qualified way. Yeah. So you're right. In a qualified way, it is a means to the end.
How do you apply that, though? How would people here, in your world...
This is a huge... We could spend a lot of time on this. It's a great question.
I don't have
an answer. We don't have time. I want to move on. But let's say this. This is why it's so important that each one of you have a personal relationship with the Messiah through a daily infilling and obedience to the Holy Spirit that's in you right now. Okay, let's take a look at, go back to Acts chapter 21. At verse 26, Paul goes to the temple and does this stuff. Okay, now, Dr. Paul, since you've alluded to this already, could you be kind enough to read for us verses 27 through 36?
When the 7 days were nearly over, some Jews from the province of Asia saw Paul at the temple. They stirred up the whole crowd and seized him, shouting, "Men of Israel, help us. This is the man who teaches all men everywhere against our people and our law and this place. And besides, he has brought Greeks into the temple area and defiled this holy place. They had previously thought..."
Struggling.
Sure. And the Ephesian from the city with Paul and assumed that Paul had brought him into the temple area. The whole city was aroused, and the people came running from all directions. Seizing Paul, they dragged him from the temple, and immediately the gates were shut. While they were trying to kill him, news reached the commander of the Roman troops that the whole city of Jerusalem was in an uproar. He at once took some officers and soldiers and ran down to the crowd. When the rioters saw the commander and his soldiers, they stopped beating Paul. The commander came up and arrested him and ordered him to be bound with two chains. Then he asked who he was and what he had done. Some in the crowd shouted one thing and some another, and since the commander could not get at the truth because of the uproar, he ordered that Paul be taken into the barracks. When Paul reached the steps, the violence of the mob was so great he had to be carried by the soldiers. The crowd that followed kept shouting, "Away with him."
Okay, thanks, Paul. So, back at 27 that Paul read here, when the 7 days were almost over, so Paul is with these four other basically Orthodox Jews who are believers in Jesus as the Messiah, going to the temple, keeping this vow for a whole week. As they're almost over, what happened?
Somebody does recognize him.
Who? Yeah, that's good. Someone recognizes. Wait a second. This guy looks familiar. Who recognizes him?
Prevent people from the province.
You're good. What kind of people from?
Jews.
Okay, and which province?
Jesus. Asia.
Asia. Yeah. That's right. The Roman province of Asia is not like we think of China. Get that out of your mind. That's not Asia in this time and age. Asia is Western Asia Minor. The capital of this province is
Ephesus.
Thank you. Where did Paul have the most problems?
Ephesus.
Where did Paul almost be executed?
Ephesus.
So these guys that know this troublemaker are there for the one of the three annual pilgrimages that all the Jewish men all over the world are commanded to make under the law. Feast of Pentecost, sees Paul, and they see four other chumps with him. Now, who are these four guys? Jew or Gentile?
Jew.
Jews. That's right. Not only Jew, they're crazy. They're like rabid Jews. They're believers, but they're rabid for the law. These Jews in Ephesus that know Paul say, "Men of Israel, Paul has done what?" We know this guy, Paul, is a troublemaker, and what has he just done? What do they accuse Paul of doing?
Telling people to go away from the law.
Okay, that's what he's done, but what has he done specifically right now in the temple?
Oh, he brought in Gentiles. That's what they believe.
That's what's going to lead to Paul's death right now. Can Gentiles be in the temple? Not breathing. Not breathing. The Temple Mount, and this is the law of Moses, excludes those who are not descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, except under penalty of death. So these guys point Paul out. Let's take a look at this. Verse 28. These guys, okay, wait. Jews of Asia, verse 27, the Jews of Asia, upon seeing him in the temple, began to stir up the crowd, and they laid hands on him. They grabbed him, and so he couldn't move. Verse 28, crying out, "Men of Israel, get over here. We need your help. This man who preaches to all men everywhere against Israel and against the law and this place, the temple." And it's there is an element of truth to that, because under Paul's theology, which is thoroughly New Testament, now that Jesus has fulfilled the law, the temple's done. So in a way, these guys have an element of truth about what they're accusing Paul of. And besides, he has even brought Greeks into the temple and defiled this holy place. Is that true?
No.
That's right. He's brought Jews to the temple. But that's going to really stir up people. That would be like going into First Baptist on Sunday and yelling Allah Akbar. You're going to get people riled up. You're going to get people riled up. And so...
Go to Memorial Day celebration in Washington, D.C.
Right, exactly.
Is that something like Hail Obama or something?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Now these guys, they just jumped to a conclusion because verse 29 says that they didn't know these guys were Jews, but they made a deduction, they made an assumption, and everyone knows when you make an assumption, you know, that, the end of that saying. Verse 29, for they had previously seen Trophimus, the Ephesian, in the city with Paul. So they'd seen Paul in Jerusalem with Trophimus, who was a Gentile. But they assumed Trophimus was a Gentile. So they assumed Paul with these four guys was with Gentiles, and he brought them into the temple. A big no-no. And verse 30, then who was provoked?
Everybody.
The whole darn city. The whole, and remember, there was, I mean, the population of Jerusalem three times a year quadrupled with people. Passover, Pentecost, and...
kind of like Naples and Caesar.
That's exactly, precisely. It's precisely right. It's an exact analogy.
So are they in season?
This is in season, yeah. And so the whole city comes down with the focus on Paul. And so they drag him out of the temple. They get him out of the holy area. And immediately the doors were shut. So they shut the temple so no one can get in there. So this mob is descended on Paul. Verse 31. While they were seeking to kill him, a report came up to the commander of the Roman cohort that all Jerusalem was in confusion. Verse 32. At once he took along some soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. And when he saw the commander and soldiers, and when they saw the commander and the soldiers, what did the people do?
They stopped beating
him. They were beating the living crap out of Paul. When they saw the Romans, they backed off. Okay, so, kind of racist.
Yeah, far away. Imagine these four other guys going, what did we...
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure I want to join this.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, the elders of the church told us, hey, yeah, get with this guy over here and go, you know.
Everything we wanted.
That's exactly right. So, okay, Jerusalem. You've got the Temple Mount complex, where the Dome of the Rock is right now, okay? And this is the Eastern Gate. And this is the complex. Now, the temple itself was right here. And within the temple, you had the outer court, and then you had the inner court, and then you had the temple building itself. And the Holy Holies was in the temple building. So Paul was in here, got kicked out in here. They're beating the crap out of him in here. Now, up in the northwest quadrant of the temple compound, there's a Roman fortress known as the Antonian Fortress. As a Roman province, the province of Judea, being under the rulership directly of Rome, and with the Roman capital being in Caesarea, knew that three times a year these pesky Jews can get pretty rebellious. So the entire Roman garrison pretty much moved into Jerusalem to keep order. And the commander's name historically is a guy named Claudius Lysias. They pulled out in this Antonian fortress. And it's a good point, for them to have an overview of what's going on with all these crazy Jews get together and worship their crazy God in their mind. And so this is actually the place where Jesus was taken by the Sanhedrin and dumped in Pilate's lap. These guys, the Romans, say, wait a second, we got problems down here. Claudius Lysias and a whole garrison cohort, which is 100 centurions, run down here. And Jews, or the nation of Israel, as subjects to Rome, can't be taking the law into their own hands. So they could get in trouble for beating someone up without some kind of due process, even a primitive due process. So they're about to rip Paul's head off, literally. I mean, limb from limb, beating the living daylights out of him. And just when they're about to strangle the last bit of life out of him, they see the cops, they back off. And this is what saves Paul's life. Verse 33. Then the commander came and took hold of him and ordered him to be bound with two chains. And he began asking, who are you, dude? And what on earth is, what? How is it that you have brought the whole city into a place where I can get controlled by the Roman Empire, the emperor, for this disturbance? And verse 34, but among the crowd, some were shouting one thing and some another. This is a lot like the crucifixion of Jesus. There's a lot of similarities here.
Crucified.
Yeah. And when he could not, when the Roman, Claudius Lysias, the Roman commander, could not find out the facts because of the uproar, there's too much going on. He ordered him to be brought back to the Antonian fortress. We need to get you under some control. We need to figure out what's going on. We can't hold an investigation out here in the middle of a mob. Verse 35, when he got to the stairs, he was carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the mob. So what's likely is the stairs of ascent, actually, which are still there, are at the southern gate. They walked him out through here, likely, closest way to get to the fortress. And on the stairs, if they get out of the larger temple complex, I mean, it really descends on him. And the cops or the Romans have a lot of problem keeping order.
So, Chris, you walked on the same steps
you
all walked on?
Yeah, you can too.
Wow.
Yeah, you can too. It is awesome.
Now, did those stairs actually go up or down?
They go up.
Okay. Well, so I mean, is that coming up? You're walking out of the temple. You're going down as you walk down.
Okay, verse 35. When he got to the stairs, he was carried by the soldiers because of the violence of the mob. It got out of control. Verse 36. But the multitude of the people kept shouting, "Away with him." Okay. Right now, studying the life of Paul, we're coming to the end of Paul's life. I mean, we're not going to be done with this class next week, but it's, you know, we got probably a month or two ahead of us still. But this now begins Paul's imprisonment for the next 5 years of his life. Sure. But, I mean, why did Paul just tell James to screw off? Would save him a lot of heartache. But, you know, Paul had to be obedient to the Holy Spirit. And Jesus told him right off, "You're going to suffer many things for my sake." Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you got to walk in the path of hardship because that's God's will for you. Oh, I don't want to hear that. I don't even want to hear it when I speak it out. It's a hard thing. But Paul spends the next 5 years of his life in prison from this point on.
Was he relieved?
I think Paul's also a bright guy, and logically he understands that it's through the adversity where he has grown. So even
that's
though
true.
He doesn't like it, intellectually he understands that's a path I got to go if I want to get where I need.
That's exactly right.
I don't know if it's a question or a comment or just it makes me think of that verse that says, you know, what was lacking in the suffering of Christ. You know, a lot of people have questions about, you know, what does that mean? But there was something lacking in the suffering of Christ that we still have to fulfill and accomplish. Could that be part of the picture?
Well, yeah, and, you know,
as an example,
part of our relationship with Jesus as believers is that we are to share in his suffering. So, yeah.
And someone told me the other day, most people who are really sold out soldiers for Christ, most aren't willing to put the target on their back.
That's true. And guess what? I've been there. And I still am there to some degree. Got to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, when you really are living kind of radically for him, yeah, your target is going to be on the back.
You're going to be controversial.
Yeah, right. Let's go on here. Let's take a look at Acts 21, verses 37 through 40. Could someone read for us verses 37 through 40?
As Paul was about to be brought into the barracks, he said to the tribune, "May I say something to you?" And he said, "Do you know Greek? Are you not the Egyptian then who recently stirred up the revolt and led the 4,000 men of the Assyrians into the wilderness?" Paul replied, "I am a Jew from Tarsus in Cilicia, a citizen of no mean city. I beg you, let me speak to the people." And when he had given him leave, Paul, standing on the step, motioned to, with his hand to the people, and then there was a great hush. He spoke to them in the Hebrew language.
Thank you. So, actually, there may be two sets of steps here, and I may be wrong on this now that I've read this. He ultimately goes over to the steps up to the barracks, and coming out, they might have gotten a hold on him, because the mob eventually get him here. Verse 37 says, as Paul was about to be brought into the barracks, so we're here now. And that's not, this is about a 2-block walk according to, you know, our geography. Paul, verse 38, he says to Claudius, as a commander, he whispers to him, can I say something to you? And how does the commander respond?
I go for it, bro.
Well, he says, do you know Greek? Remember, Paul, remember, one thing we got to keep in mind about this whole time period and this whole area was that there's a confluence of cultures and languages. Hellenism, being the Greek culture, Israel, a Hebrew culture, and Rome, a Latin culture. And so Jesus probably spoke what's called Koine Greek, the common language, the lingua franca. Jesus spoke Hebrew, taught in synagogue. There's a bastardized form of Hebrew called Aramaic that was probably also spoken. Latin, probably just the Romans knew Latin. And Paul probably spoke to Claudius Lysias in either some kind of Koineally Greek or maybe even a scholarly Greek. And so the commander takes note, this guy, you know, he's probably educated.
Pretty sure.
He's special.
That's exactly right. This guy's more than just a hoodlum.
Sounds like Miami.
It's culture. That's a good point, yeah.
There's all this culture, yeah. Influx, it's a harbor city.
Exactly right. And so then Paul says to him, look, I'm a Jew, born in Tarsus of Cilicia, brought up in a city. I was educated under Gamaliel. Gamaliel was the man. Even under Jews today recognize Gamaliel as a famous rabbi. Strictly according to the law of our fathers, being zealous for God. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm reading way ahead. Back up. Verse 38. Then the commander says, then you're not the Egyptian. Some time ago stirred up a revolt and led 4,000 men of the assassins out into the wilderness. Historically, this did happen. There were a lot of false messiahs in this time, a lot of rebels. There was a guy from Egypt that historically went into Jerusalem, got it, basically led a revolt, and these people got put down by the Roman soldiers into the wilderness. They got basically decimated. And so this guy, the commander, thinks Paul's another one of these guys. Verse 39, but Paul says, wait a second, I'm a Jew of Tarsus, no insignificant city, and I beg you, allow me to speak to the people. And so this commander's like, okay, maybe if this guy can settle him down, maybe I'll just let him speak. So, verse 40, when he'd given permission, Paul, standing on the stairs, motioned to the people with his hand. And when there was a great hush, he spoke to them in Hebrew. Now, why would he speak to the folks in Hebrew?
They're tough.
They're Jews. That's exactly right. Okay. Okay, so we get into Acts 22.
Can the Romans understand them? The soldiers?
Probably. Actually, good. Would you read verse 1 through 5, 22? I think this will answer our question.
What is it?
Chapter 22, verses 1 through 5.
There's an island.
Oh, don't worry about it. See, I didn't know you had your... That's okay. Don't worry about it. I'll read it. I'll go ahead and read it. Don't worry about it. That's okay.
Technology's in the way.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll read it. Brothers and fathers, hear my defense, which I now offer you. And when they heard that he was addressing them in Hebrew, they became even more quiet. And he said, verse 3, I'm a Jew, born in Tarsus, brought up under the city, educated under Gamaliel. So immediately, he's building credibility. Strictly according to the law of our fathers, being zealous for God, just as you all are all today. Verse 4, I persecuted this way to the death, binding and putting both men and women into prison, as also the high priest and all the council of the elders can testify. From them I also received letters to the brothers and started off for Damascus in order to bring even those who were there to Jerusalem as prisoners to be punished. I'll keep reading here. Verse 6. But it happened that I was on my way approaching Damascus about noontime. A very bright light suddenly flashed from heaven all around me, and I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to me, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Verse 8, I answered, who are you, Lord? Said again, Jesus the Nazarene, whom you are persecuting. Verse 9, and those who are with me saw the light, to be sure, but did not understand the voice of the one who was asking me. Verse 10, and I said, what shall I do, Lord? And the Lord said to me, get up and go into Damascus, and there you'll be told all that has been appointed for you to do. But since I could not see because of the brightness of that light, I was led by the hand to those who were with me and came to Damascus. Verse 12, a certain Ananias, a man who is devout, by the standard of the law and well spoken of by all the Jews who lived there. Verse 13, came to me and standing near to me said, Brother Saul, receive your sight. That very time I looked at him, and he said, the God of our fathers has appointed you to know his will and to see the righteous one and to hear an utterance from his mouth. Verse 15, for you will be a witness for him.